Once again, your Bible should be open to Romans 12, 13, 14, and 15. I was told that we had a question about the first part. So let's go ahead, Bunny. Let's hear the question. No, I think it goes hand in hand with it. I think it really does. I think it's a, I don't know as if it's a furtherance of it, but it's certainly an area that you can, I think the what limits it in verse 8, the showing mercy with cheerfulness, the only thing, if I was to think about that and say that there is a difference, the difference would be that there you're looking at meeting the practical needs of the assembly. Here, it goes beyond that. Because to meet the practical needs of the assembly by showing mercy with cheerfulness, the godly thinking that you had to have there was the body type thinking. But this now has the further, so I guess what I'm talking myself into is that it is a furtherance, because you have the furtherance of godly love, that you now have loving kindness and you have tender heartedness. But this gets almost more specific to specific matters that come to your purview that you would want to labor in relieving. So I don't think they're disconnected, but I do think that gives you a taste of it, of showing mercy with cheerfulness. And and I think it's very similar to this in that way, because when you first come across the issue of tenderheartedness, all those references back there in God's program with Israel are references to His tender mercies. So, but I don't know if that helps answer that or not. But I probably would come down more on the side that it's a furtherance, a further skill in a further area. Yeah. Yeah.
Private life kind of level than
It doesn't immediately have to do with the practical function of the assembly. It has to do with and I'm trying to avoid getting into cases because I want you to be able to discern that on your own. It's part of the work that you do as a son. But it would be cases that come to your attention that are more of a personal matter, that would have to do with their own sonship life being impeded by something, and you would want to help them out in that particular area, something very specific. So I think I'm going to stop at that point without going. Yes. Yeah. In that sense, yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. In the way you're using general there, even though this is specific. Yeah. I know what you're saying. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, let's get back to let's move now the ball a little bit here tonight and get into some of the details of dealing with given to hospitality. Like I said, we've now got the general breakdown, where the given to hospitality is going to take the tender-hearted thinking, and that's going to be your conduct and behavior among lost people, because it's going to deal with this one specific necessity that they have. And a lost person only has one specific necessity, and that is their lost condition. They need to hear the gospel and be saved, justified unto eternal life. The reason why you've got two verses then after that is because they deal with the two areas of response in which you are not trained in up to this point. There's three responses you can get two of them are addressed here because the first one, you already know what to do. A positive response to someone who comes under your hospitality, you give them the gospel. But you can have a negative response, which is what verse 14 does, is for, is your godly labor, and you can have an indifferent response, which is what verse 15 addresses as your godly labor with that unsaved lost person who comes under your hospitality. But the issue in both of these cases of verse 14 and 15 is to provide an environment to keep that open door of communication, to keep that gospel information open to them and the window of opportunity open to them. And you're really creating that environment that I talk about of preserving environment, preserving the gospel's ability to continue to do its job. Well, let's begin looking at that statement up there, given to hospitality, and some of the details in connection with our godly wisdom with lost people that we come into contact with. And once again, every wise decision that we make with them, everything that you're going to do is going to be governed by every thought you have. The fabric of how you think thoughts about them is going to be governed by the godly thinking of tender-heartedness. And that's not sloppy tender-heartedness like the world has taught you, but that's godly tender-heartedness. And there's intelligent understanding of how that was generated and what that is, and we've dealt with that. But that's what's going to govern your thinking in connection with them, of being tender toward them and sensitive and compassionate to the one single necessity they have. And that tender-heartedness naturally is going to seek its natural outlet. And it does have. God's provided it to have a natural outlet for some godly conduct and behavior. So what I'm saying in that is, just as we get underway to deal with details, you've got to always remember when you're dealing with godliness, thinking, living, and labor, you never break them up and look at them isolatedly, if that's even a word. But they're not to be isolated. They couple together. The thinking has to come and it comes with the godly conduct and behavior. And with the godly labor comes the thinking and the conduct with it. And I'm just reminding you of this technique again as we get into the conduct and behavior aspect of this, that the tender-heartedness is going to rule every decision, every action that you make in this case. So the godly thinking in connection with our sonship wisdom as we function as sons among lost people that we come into contact with is, again, tender-heartedness, which has been generated by the wise use of godly loving kindness, and therefore is the unstated godly thinking of the fifth component of our sonship wisdom. Well, that takes us then to the godly living. Three words, given to hospitality. Our conduct and behavior as sons, according to the godly tender-hearted thinking, is going to be given to hospitality. Now, I'm going to do something tonight, the remainder of the time that we've got left. I'm not going to talk right now about the word given. I'm going to come back and we're not going to talk a lot about it, but I'm going to address it more in detail in a little later on. But right now, I think what's important for us to understand is really, as I said in the first lesson, we have a word up there that we all are familiar with. And it's that word hospitality. And we're all familiar with it. Just like we're familiar with all of the words, basically, that we've been dealing with in our godly wisdom. The issue is, you've been taught the wise use of hospitality, what it is definition-wise, by this world. In fact, I don't think there's anybody really in this assembly that I know that I would say is, well, they're a very inhospitable person. I mean, I don't know of anybody in this assembly that I wouldn't say is inhospitable based upon the general worldly use of the word hospitable. But that's not what we're after here. The word hospitality, and I'm going to do this, I don't do this very often, but I'm going to show you this. This comes from the Greek word ph, and it comes from this. We're not going to get a change in words or anything. It's excellently translated. philonexia. This is Philonexia. And that Greek word is philonexia, or philonexia, to put the emphasis on the right syllable. But what you have here, you have this first part of it, philo. What's that word? Love. You know what exia means in Greek? Stranger. Love of a stranger. And I only bring this out to show you that hospitality has love in view. So godly love is still the rule of the day, even down here in verses 13, 14, and 15. So we have planexia, which means love to strangers. It's used, this particular word, this exact Greek word, is used only twice in the Bible. Once here, and once over in Hebrews 13:2. You remember, most of you have heard this verse, if not have it memorized. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. It's in the plural, unawares. A lot of people like that verse because they think that they're entertaining angels today. Well, that was written to Israel, and that's not what we're doing today. We're not entertaining angels today. No, nobody entertains angels. We're teaching them, we're educating them. They are sitting in their class chairs being instructed by us today. That's a whole nother topic. But I'm just telling you where these two instances occur. However, there is a derivative of planexia that is used, or philonexia. There's a derivative of philonexia that is used several more times in the Bible. And you will find it, for instance, used over in 1 Timothy 3:2 and Titus 1:8. In those two instances, when Paul is giving Timothy the list of qualifications for the pastor, the bishop of the local assembly, and for the deacons of the local assembly, they are to be given to hospitality. And again, that's not just to be generous to people who come into their home. But that's actually something that now is based upon what we're going to learn here about what it means to be given to hospitality. There's one other use of it over in the epistles for the remnant epistles in 1 Peter 4:9. So I only bring this out once again to say to you that love, philos, being one of the Greek words for love, for our word love is still in view here. Well, let's go back now to this issue of given to hospitality and focusing our attention upon this issue of hospitality, philonexia. And this, love being at the core of it points up once again the real power of the decision-making skill that love is. A lot of people don't see love as a decision-making skill, but it is. It's one of the most powerful of them all. Because it sets up norms and standards of what is esteemed and what is valued, what is not esteemed, what is not valued. And just a huge amount of decisions you ever make are going to be based upon that very simple process of what is valued and esteemed and what is not. And this points up the fact that it is a powerful decision-making skill of sonship, especially in connection with making wise decisions as a son. Of course, the love here is not human love, but it's godly love, which has those three major features to it that have now been generated in us and brought into existence in our inner man as sons, all three: selflessness, kindness, tenderheartedness, being expressed really now in that one word, tenderheartedness, because that encompasses all three of them. They're built on one another. You can't talk about tenderheartedness without talking about loving kindness, without talking about selflessness. And so it's godly love in view. But outside of that, outside of godly love to strangers, let's get out of the Greek world, which isn't going to help us at all, and get into the English world and understand something about hospitality that 400 years ago, those King James translators understood and immediately translated this word properly, hospitality. What does hospitality mean? I gave you a little homework to do on that word. Did anybody come up with anything? What does it mean? What does hospitality mean, to be hospitable? And all I'm looking for right now is a dictionary-type definition of it. By the way, if you tried to look this up in Crabs, you were not going to find it. It's one of the words he doesn't use. Anybody? Let her fly. We're just family. To treat strangers with charity. Good. Anybody else? To what?
Serve.
To serve. That's good. Yeah. Kind and warm-hearted. Okay, that's good. To alleviate, to heal. That's very good. Okay. Generous. Okay. To care for. Okay. All right. Anybody just dying to say something? I don't think any of you are dying to say anything, but that's all good. That's generally what the concept means, especially to most people today. If you go to a dictionary and you get a diction-type definition of the word hospitality, it can mean a lot of things. For instance, and I basically source two major sources for my dictionary definitions, one being the 1812 edition, or I'm sorry, the 1828 edition of Webster's Dictionary. 1828, not 19. 1828. You can still get a facsimile of it. Don't think that you could, well, I'm not telling you not to, but you're going to go poor trying to buy a real one. I've priced them. And if you've got $30,000 or $40,000 to spend on one book, go right at it. But you can get an exact facsimile of it for $50. But you can also go online and get it for nothing. There's an online Webster's 1828 dictionary, and you can. I've found, though, sometimes it doesn't give all the usages, but it's there nonetheless. And the other one, of course, is the great Oxford English Dictionary. So if you go to a dictionary-type meaning, hospitality, I came up and found these things. It says, the act or practice of receiving and entertaining strangers or guests without reward, or with kind and generous liberality. Somebody was talking about generous. Being kind to strangers. That's usually the most common way in which hospitality is thought of today, that you're kind to strangers. If you saw somebody in your town, in your community, your village, your wherever you live, I don't know if you live in villages anymore, but in our town we had some people that everybody knew was just generous-hearted and very hospitable. You could knock on their door at 2 in the morning and be made to feel welcome. And welcoming, that's one of the concepts behind the dictionary definition of hospitality. Being kind to strangers and guests, disposed to treat guests with generous kindness. Kind, generous. Generous comes up a lot. And inviting to strangers and guests. The OED says the reception and entertainment of guests, visitors, or strangers with liberality and goodwill. Now, that's the dictionary definition. And basically, there's nothing new there, or actually, there's a lot there that you already knew, that the world taught you, that's basically the wisdom of the world, and how they would distinguish and say, well, that's hospitality to me. Well, that's a dictionary definition, but really, that won't do here, because that's not what this is driving at. Let's put it this way. That's not nearly enough of what this is driving at. And you could exhaust your Greek dictionary and every English dictionary, and you're still not going to get to what this is after. The context demands something here. And so what we're after here is what does hospitality mean to Paul? What does it mean to God himself? And what does it mean in this particular context? And because of the way it's worded, given to hospitality, because you're supposed to be given to it, not just occasionally hospitable, it indicates to me anyway that you're already supposed to know this, know something about what this word is about. Not only because you're to be immediately given as a word that says you immediately go into action, but also the thing that indicates that to me is the fact that God doesn't come along and give us an analysis of what it means. It indicates that you should know this before you got here. This is one of those instances where God doesn't define it. He doesn't describe it. He doesn't analyze what hospitality is. You're supposed to have some understanding before you get here of what it is. In fact, a lot of people don't really know how to be given to hospitality. They know how to be occasionally hospitable. But the truth of the matter is, there aren't many people on this earth that know how to be given to hospitality. And really, many Christians, you would think, oh my goodness, not Christians. All Christians are hospitable people. A few moans coming up there. But many Christians don't know how to be given to hospitality. Now, one of the reasons I know that is because this is something that sons know. And most Christians, even though they positionally are adopted sons, they've never once functioned as sons. And that's because most of the time in the Christian world, all they do, they look at the world itself. Most Christians are taught love, kindness, sympathy, compassion. I could stand here and list words for 10 minutes that all surround this issue, but they're all taught that by the world before they ever once darken the door of the church. And so what most Christians do is they come along and mimic the hospitality that the world gave them. The idea of hospitality that the world taught them, that the wisdom of men taught them, and then they just bring the world's ideas into a church environment. They say, there, that's what it is. And that's the ruination of a lot of churches, because when it comes to things like wisdom, love, compassion, tenderheartedness, on and on and on we could go, they haven't rescued these terms out from the world system and understood what does that mean to God. We're kind of going back and recovering terminology. Well, the truth is, hospitality or being hospitable is much more than what most folks think it is. Again, if hard pressed, most people would come up with the idea of being kind to strangers. But that's, if you were to just give me a quick definition. What is hospitality? It was being kind to strangers. Yeah, but you can be kind to non-strangers and be hospitable. Hospitable to your own family. But that's the general idea. But a lot of people don't realize there's a whole lot more to it than that. And the truth is, being given to hospitality as God uses it and as God Himself thinks about it is really only understood and appreciated and actually put into practice by an educated, intelligent son. They're the only ones alive on this earth today that put that kind of godly hospitality into practice in their conduct and in their behavior. They're the only ones. Because no one else knows what that means within a sonship context. They all deal with it outside of a sonship context. So we're interested in what our Father thinks about it and how He thinks when He utilizes it. And my understanding is there really is something that sets the biblical use, and I might say here the sonship use of hospitality, that sets it apart from the way it's normally understood as being kind to strangers or visitors, being welcoming and making them feel wanted, making them feel comfortable in your home, enjoying the company of people who come under your roof, being welcoming to other people. To one of the things that you say, well, they're very hospitable. Usually, they've included you in whatever they participate in their home life. You know, if they like to pray, stand around the table and hold hands, and you do it with them, and they invite you in to do those kinds of things with them, and you go away thinking, well, they were very hospitable. I'm not saying I enjoyed it all, but it was very hospitable. So you have something seemingly nice to say about it, the experience. Well, there's something about this use of how God uses it in our sonship curriculum that does set it apart and distinguish it as different from any of the ways that I just described. And my understanding is that kind of definition, as we looked at it in a definition type setting and the way most people commonly think of it, it really lacks something. It lacks something in this context. It really lacks the most, you hear me oftentimes talking about the radical root element of hospitality. It lacks the most distinguishing and the most discriminating thing that makes hospitality or you being hospitable different from merely being polite, from merely being courteous or being friendly or generous, or here's a great word, gregarious, or any other term that encompasses the normal definition of hospitality. And to get at this difference, I think the best way to get at it is to ask a question. And let's not talk about hospitality or hospitable, but let's talk about the word hospital. Hospital. Let's take that word hospital. I kind of asked this question before. Why is a building, and a building gets called that, why is a building called a hospital?
Because of what goes on inside.
Because of what goes on inside. That's an answer. And it's not far off. You're on the target, but we haven't got to the tin ring yet. Knowing why a building is called a hospital gets at this one distinguishing feature, that's what we're after, that makes hospitality different from all the other words that could be used to describe it. Anybody else? Why is a building called a hospital? Cecil's on track. He's certainly not like I am most of the time. I'm off track in the woods somewhere. I'm looking at a bunch of trees and I'm in the forest when I should be over in the clearing. So we're on the target, but there's this, and it's very simple, and you have to think very basic, very fundamental. Yeah, but you're just simply pointing out that it has a different function. Everyone can go there. Yeah. Right, it's a place to serve people. And I think Bunny brought up to serve as being hospitable. That's good because that's on target. It's on the target of what we're after. Now you're hitting the target. A hospital is a hospital because that building is called a hospital because the ones who go there have a dire need. They have a necessity. That's why it's called a hospital. If you look up, now here's a tip for you, one of the tools that I use. There's another great book that was written by another, I think he was another pastor. Most of these guys were ministers, pastors, reverends anyway. A guy by the name of Walter Skeet wrote a book about the English language that's on Etymology, Skeet's Etymological Dictionary of the English Language. You can also go online. There's a great little online website. It's just called, I think, Online Etymology or something like that. Etymology is how words originated, how they originate. When you look at the word hospital in an etymological type dictionary and look at the origin of it, one of the things that you'll find is it'll say a hospital is a shelter for the needy. And that's the thing. That's the distinguishing difference. The people who go to a hospital, it's a hospital because people go there that have a dire need. Any building that's called a hospital is a place where people go who have a dire need that they cannot handle themselves. That's one of the very first things you realize about a hospital. It's called that because it's a place where people go who have a dire need that they cannot handle themselves. You may have tried to treat it with every home remedy you've got. But when you get to the point that it's getting so bad, it's getting so infected, it's being such a problem, I'm just going to have to give up and I'm going to have to go to the hospital. And I go to a hospital because I go to a place where my necessity, my dire need, can be handled by someone else because I can't handle it anymore myself. Generally, it's a physical need when we talk about a hospital. But it could also be a mental need. And therefore, we have mental hospitals. They don't deal with physical needs. But yet we retain the word hospital. Mental hospital. We retain that word. It's a hospital because it's a shelter. It's a place where a dire need can be met by someone who can handle it when they can't handle it themselves. And the truth of the matter is, a hospital, and this is funny to think about because you really start to see the inner workings of why hospitals are built the way they're built, why they're furnished the way they're furnished, why they're lit the way they're lit. When you talk about furnishings, lighting, what are you talking about? Yeah. You're talking about an environment. You're creating an environment. And a hospital wants to create an atmosphere or an environment of wellness, of getting somebody well. And a hospital is an environment in which there are people dedicated to dealing with the needs and necessities of other people that other people have, that are of a, listen, they are of a particular, there's your specificness, a particular nature that they cannot cope or deal with on their own, and in which to continue with the need or necessity would be dangerous. It would be devastating. I'm going to put that up on the board. A hospital is an environment in which there are people dedicated to dealing with the needs and necessities that other people have, that are of a particular nature, could be a mental nature, could be a birthing nature, or whatever the nature is. It's a hospital that has particular nature of that person's need or necessity in view that person cannot cope with, they cannot deal with all on their own, and in which to continue with the need or necessity would be dangerous. It would be devastating to them. You get a gangrenous foot, if you can't deal with it anymore. And gangrene won't just stop, but it will continue eating. It will continue destroying tissue and flesh until it is either halted, reversed, or you have to amputate it. But if you let it go, that's why, for instance, if you get gangrene set in one leg, it goes to the other leg. And your thought goes from losing one leg to losing both legs. And then it goes from there to killing you. And I'm just using that as one of thousands of illustrations that we could use, that with if you continue, if the person continues in the state, in the condition or the situation of the necessity, if they still continue on with that, it would be dangerous or devastating to them. Now you're getting to see what you are when you're given to hospitality. You're going to become a hospital. You're a walking, talking, living, breathing hospital. And you're given to hospitality. And you're the one that can cope and deal with the situation that that person can no longer deal with. That unsaved person, if they were to go on in that necessity, they could lose their everlasting life. But one of the basic issues and very critical issues here is that a hospital is a shelter for the needy, and it's an environment. And that's the context. That's why the context here demands hospitality, being given to hospitality. Because what you're doing in that, and the godly labor that you're going to be involved in either verse 14 or verse 15, depending on whether you get a negative response or an indifferent response, you're going to be continually protecting and preserving the environment in which the gospel can still be given and there the appeal can still be made to that lost person. Therefore, a hospital, when it comes to hospitality, understanding it this way, from this basic, most general, essential thing that a hospital is a shelter, is a place where people who have a need, who have a necessity, goes. And it's an environment where you find dedicated people dealing with those needs and necessities. Take that now to our text. Therefore, hospitality, when someone is hospitable, they're not just being polite. This word is far more powerful than that, than just being friendly or courteous or generous or gregarious. Rather, they're being hospitable. The idea of hospitality in Romans 12:13, and the kind of sonship thinking you need to have is that when you think of being hospitable, it's because you recognize a serious need, a dire need, which could only be called a necessity that someone has. And as a son, you care, that tenderheartedness, you care about that need. And someone who is therefore hospitable, they desire to address that need. And they, by what they do in their conduct and behavior, create an environment around themselves and around the person who has the need or the necessity that invites the person who has the necessity to allow them to service it. This is one of the great things about nursing and the environment of you allowing a nurse to do something that you would almost you would never allow in any other circumstance. But because you're in that direness of need and because you're in an environment, then it's inviting for that need to be met, for that need or that necessity to be serviced by them. I know it's funny, it's only funny from a male's perspective. It's certainly not funny it's funny from a husband's perspective. It's certainly not funny from a wife's perspective. But it's just kind of interesting to see your wife give birth. And it was like you come to a point where you're all modest and you're all, oh, don't look, and all this kind of thing. You come to a point where it's so much pain and everything is going on, and it's just like, I don't care if they brought the Boston Pops in here. I just let her fly. Just get this thing out. That may be a horrible illustration, but It's the only one I've got on hand right at the moment. But the truth of the matter is the environment made that inviting, made it to have the necessity to be serviced by the person. And when someone is given to hospitality, when you're given to it, they go out of their way in connection with that. They go out of their way to contact people who have the need that they know exists, even though the people who have the need might not know them. And that's why Paul didn't need to repeat the word necessity here. He doesn't have to repeat the word necessity when it came to the unsaved, because it's inherent in the word hospitality. That's what you've got. You've got inherent in the word. It's a shelter for the needy, a place where the needs and necessities other people have get met. Someone is going to provide that service for them. So Paul doesn't have to repeat the word necessity. It's in the word hospitality. So therefore, just to put a cap on it for tonight, hospitality, in the sense that God is using it in our sonship, fifth component of our instruction of wisdom, is a tender-hearted, compassionate response to a necessity. Originally, to someone you didn't even know had, but it could include ones that you know. So it could be someone who you didn't even know, but you know he had that. You don't know them all that well, but it could include someone that you do know well. But the issue is to have that tender-hearted, compassionate response to a necessity, the one necessity that unsaved person has, and that's the necessity to hear the gospel of Christ and to respond to the gospel of Christ properly, positively. And if they don't, you have two verses that's going to give you the information you need, because, folks, if all you operate upon is what you were taught in Romans 1 through 5, you don't have quite the skill set necessary to be able to know how the hospitality works and just how big of a deal it is to ever sever that. Because you're going to do everything you can. In fact, the truth of the matter is, the only way that you're going to sever the environment of hospitality for that unsaved person is because the unsaved person will sever it themselves. You'll do everything in your power not to do that. But they have something in their power they can do that will sever it. And that's the skill of knowing the first eight verses of Romans chapter 3. And knowing when what you hear is a self-opposer, and only in that case would you claim their damnation is just. Do like Paul did and make that gesture of disgust and walk away. But everything up to that point is going to be done under the issue of hospitality. You are that lost person's hospital. Well, it's being used. That's pretty much the way in which it's being used here. But I'm not completely done talking about this. But I think that's a good stopping point for tonight. Let that incubate a little bit between now and Sunday, and hopefully that will bring us back to the issue of what it means. We'll address the issue of being given to hospitality and clean that up. And then we will just simply address the two components that deal with our conduct and behavior, the one in verse 14 and the one in verse 15. All right? Very good. Y'all did a great job. We'll stop right there, and we'll pick it up then on Sunday morning with our heads bowed. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this.